Accession number 19391, Real 4.
There was one incident in particular, the same convoy, when I was on the starboard wings of the bridge, and Ellis Shelford let loose then. There was firing everywhere, and a German U-boat surfaced about 50 yards away from our starboard quarter. And I don't know who was the more shocked, us or the skipper of the U-boat. But anyway, he dived straight away, and there was so much commotion going on, we couldn't pick him up on the Asdic straight away. He was so close, plus there was ships all around us and bombs dropping and this, that and the other. Anyway, we turned round as quick as we could. He dived, and we got a contact straight away, and we followed him, but I'm afraid all the turbulence in the water, we lost him. We didn't get him anyway. At least we'd know. I think we did fire a few depth charges, but...
Where were you at the time when that U-boat sailed?
I'd been given... I was in the wheelhouse at the time.
Doing what?
Well, I was... Like, in a wheelhouse, you have... the coxswain's on the wheel. You've got another PO telegraph man. Another one on the red counter. And another signalman and all these sort of things. They all have a different job line, you know. So, but this tack, they put the torpedo bombers over first, and then they came with high-level bombing. But it didn't last all that long. We did lose a lot of ships, but there was two ships in the convoy that we couldn't have done without. One was the Avenger, and a Woolworths aircraft carrier. She was flying her planes off. And the other was the Scylla. She was an Akak cruiser. Oh, and the Ulster Monarch. Or Ulster Prince, no. They were Akak cruisers, merchant ships converted to Akak cruisers, with tremendous escorts. There must have been anything up to 30 destroyers right round the convoy line. Now the following day it happened again, and gradually got less, and it was very surprising that Jerry never carried on, because he could have almost wiped that convoy out. But the escort was fantastic, it was like.
How did you cope with the weather in the Arctic?
Well, lucky enough, most of the time I was up there, it wasn't too bad. Some of the other lads must have found it very bad when they were up there all the time, but we seemed to do trips up there and then go on to another job on a Malta convoy or something like that, you see.
Did you ever set foot in Russia?
Oh, yes. We landed in Archangel.
What was that like?
There were certainly odd people, that's putting it mildly. We just wouldn't have anything to do with us. And I remember one incident that while we were in there with this particular convoy, Jerry was dropping incendiary bombs on, because he was only 30 miles away, you see, and he was dropping incendiary bombs on Archangel, and the lad started to give a hand unloading, getting the furniture out of the houses for the people, because they're nearly all wooden shacks and things like that. And the Russians were there with fixed bayonets, you know. They would have had a go and shot us if we hadn't stopped. They just wouldn't let us help in any way. There was no way they wanted us to show friendly. Then we walked around the town a few times, just go for a walk, and Matlock would. And offer them cigarettes, because we had it, and they would never take any of you. Sometimes it might couple. I did get friendly with one. I was, PO then, and I was PO of the watch, and I was on the gangway, and there's another Russian ship opposite, and we got talking, or pretending to talk, if you like, and he was all right. I did have a funny occasion there. Aboard, my younger brother and sister were still at school, I think, and I brought a sledge back with me, which we got for a couple of packs of woodbines then. And landing back in Liverpool after this particular convoy. And at the same time we were going ashore, the dockers were knocking off. And I had this, two of us were carrying this sledge, which was about 6 foot long. Big posh sledge it was. And they were all shouting at us, oh, the train was full, the overhead railway. And someone said, where have you been, Jack? Like, you know, I said, we've just come from Russia. Well, they couldn't have done enough for us, the dockers, you know. As soon as we said that, give them room, you know, and all this. And
why do you think they had that attitude?
Well, I don't think they realised what was good. They thought, thought we just got it locally, I suppose, like, and then they respected us when they realised we'd just come back from Russia, like, you know.
Why do you think they had so much respect for you, that from the fact
well,
that...
Well, I suppose they realised, you know, things were pretty tough at the time, like, you know, and I suppose most of the dockers were a little bit leaning that to the workers' side of it, if you...
Politically, you mean?
Yep.
Did you buy a sledge in a shop?
Yes, it was in a shop. I didn't pay very much for it. I know there was very little in the windows at all. There was, might be a coat here or there, like, you know. And this was, and I think either some relation of mine still got it to this day. It was a very smart job, like, you know. It was had brakes on it and proper steering wheel. I don't think it steered, like, but it was from here to there long.
So you paid cash for it?
No, I think I gave two packs of cigarettes for it, I think.
To the shopkeeper?
Yeah, well, I did anything. Like, they'd sell a cigarette probably for far more than the sledge was worth. You know, bartering, I think, like, you know.
What impression did you get about Cangill as a town?
Oh, a terrible dump. Well, there was one instance there that we were tied up alongside with the Katie's, was another destroyer. She was lost at shortly afterwards. And there's a big barge there, say about 200 foot long, a big steel barge, and it was full of hay, right up in the air, big, just like a today's big container ships, full of hay. And there must have been anything up to 50 to 100 women on one side of it, and 50 to 100 women on the other side rowing it. And when we fell into divisions in the morning, she was just coming up to our stern, and when we knocked off at 12 o'clock, she'd just got to her bow. And, you know, you could see that the things, they were drawing this without stopping, and you only moved about a couple of hundred feet to get round, like, you know, anybody a tug or our motorboat could have gone and give a hand to tow it, but you couldn't. There was another time there that things were very hard. By the time we were going to sail, these Liberty ships had come in there, a few of them, and they were unloading the tanks off them with their own derricks. And we were doing squad drill. I got a gang on the quay, purely for something to do, I think, giving them squad drill. And all of a sudden, as they were unloading this tank, there was a man guiding, one of the Russians guiding the unloading of it. And as the tank came round, it hit him, knocked him straight over the side onto the quay wall, smashed all his head in, and straight away we rushed to help. And this Russian was an armed guard, there were hundreds of armed guards around, with a rifle and bayonet, and they'd have had a go at us if we did. They wouldn't allow any of us to help at all in any way. They were really odd, they were. You know.
Why do you think they had this attitude?
Well, it seemed they didn't seem to realise that we were there to give a help, like, you know. They seemed to begrudge or didn't want friendship.
But you didn't think much of Archangel?
It was.
You didn't think much of Archangel?
Not really, no.
You wouldn't have liked to have lived there?
Oh, no, it was terrible dump.
Now, you said you were in... what did you mean when you said the Heinkels use the golden comb? What's a golden comb?
Well, that's what the Admiralty and all that nicknamed the flight. They all I don't know why. I've got a book somewhere. I'll send the book to you.
But you wouldn't have known that at the time.
Oh, we didn't know at the time. It was only what I've read in the book afterwards. Like, it was known afterwards, was that?
Now, you said that you were in the Malcolm on Malta convoys.
Mm.
What are your memories of the Malta convoys? Do you remember which particular convoys you were on?
Pedders were there on.
Well, that was August 1942.
42. Yeah, well, we...
What do you remember about Pedestal?
I remember the Eagle getting sunk. We picked up 200 survivors off her.
Did you see the Eagle get hit?
No. We were virtually alongside her. What happened then? We left Malta with this convoy, with 14 merchant ships and all that. And it was a very big escort. They had 5 aircraft carriers then, and I think it was about 37 destroyers and cruisers and all. Well, a very, very big escort. And the weather had been lovely for the first 36 to 2 days. Very good. And then, funny enough, I was on the bridge again and was reading the yeoman's signal. And it said, as he was reading it out, he said, HMS Eagle torpedoed and sunk. Well, we hadn't gone to action stations. That was the first realisation that we got. And well, it said, stand by to pick up survivors. Anyway, we started, I think we had been the crash destroyer for the either the Indomitable or the Implacable or something, if I get now. And there was a tug there picking survivors up, which we got alongside her, called the Jaunty. She was an Admiralty tug, big tug, which was there in case any ships was, you know, wanted towing. And she'd picked up 200. And she transferred them to us. And we left them, had them aboard. But we couldn't see any survivors, anything else, no sign of the ship or anything at all, like, you know. Anyway, by this time we knew this same sub was around, and she didn't get sunk, incidentally, I read afterwards. But our job was really to keep an eye on the Furious, because she wasn't going all the way. She was only going so far, halfway, per se, or three quarters, and then flying her planes, Hurricanes, off to land in Malta. But that night, we still had these survivors aboard. And I'd come off the wheel then, and I'd give my hammock to one of the survivors, and I was sleeping on the iron deck, which is either side of the destroyer, like, you know. And all of a sudden, the rev, she started opening up pretty fast. And obviously, she was almost flat out, which is 30-odd knots, like, you know. And she heeled over to port. At the same time, action stations went, and my action station was in the wheelhouse. And as I was running along the deck to get to the bridge, I could see this other destroyer coming. We were going to port. And I could see this other destroyer, which turned out to be the...
Don't worry, it'll come back to you later.
The other destroyer was coming almost alongside that. We turned to port, and she was coming. All of a sudden, there was an unearthly bloody crash, and she'd rammed this sub. It wasn't the Wolfhound, it was the Cumnus. Anyway, it had ended up that we both had a go to ram this submarine, which was on the surface, and this other destroyer beat us to it, and she cut her in half, sank the submarine. And the forecastle, the following morning, when we seen this other destroyer, was about 20 or 30 feet of the destroyer's bow cut off. Anyway, she carried on back to Duke very slowly herself. I think she had a Corvette with her. And then that day we flew the planes off the Furious, and we had the job of escorting her back, like, you know. Then we went back again, but we didn't go all the way back to Malta. We sort of...
All the way back to Malta?
We didn't go all the way back to Malta. We didn't go to Malta. We sort of played around there. But there was only about three ships got in the end, and by coincidence, one of the lads who was on the Ohio, which was a famous tanker, lives in the next road to me. You know.
Now, what were the survivors from the Eagle in? What condition were they in?
They weren't bad. The weather was gorgeous. It was lovely. It was very calm and everything.
Any other Malta convoys you can remember?
Well, there was none of any outstanding that I could think of. Like, you know. That was the worst. Like, you know.
Any other incidents you can remember that you were in with Malcolm?
Well, we were doing all convoy work, like, you know, it got almost routine after that, like, you know, it was...
About when did you leave Malcolm then?
I left it about the end of... I left Malcolm at Freetown with the idea of coming back to HMS Defiance to qualify for torpedo coxswain, but they didn't happen like that. When I got put ashore at Freetown, they detailed me off as senior PO to 500, what they call T12 other POs, artificers and such like. They were repairing ships when they came in. They're all tradesmen, they were, like, you know. But I was a PO seaman, you see. And I got stuck there for ages.
Where was this?
This was a Freetown. And
what was Freetown like during the war?
Oh, it was a terrible dump it was, like, you know.
In what way?
Well, we never ever used to go into the town. It was... I did go in a couple of times to try and qualify for... skipper for trawlers. I thought, well, I might as well learn something while I'm here. So, but they couldn't get a class going. So I got put in charge of these blokes.
But why was Freetown such a dump?
Well, it's right in West Africa. I mean, you know, all niggers, and the filth of there was terrible, like, you know. But Freetown, it said, we're at Kissy Barracks, which is about 5 miles up the river from the town of Freetown.
So after, was it healthy?
Well, we were all taking tablets inoculated for yellow fever and blackwater fever, but funny enough, I worked a racket in Freetown to come home, because we'd been out there a lot. I've been third in the Comorin a lot, like, you know, and then the Malcolm in and out of there all the time, and I was going to look if I was going to, they'd stuck me there and forgot all about me. And I knew something was going on, because all these big troop ships kept coming in, and almost empty in Freetown of troops. And I went to the commander's secretary, and I said, well, why can't I get a draft you at home, like, you know. And he said, well, there was a draft fit for you, but there's no one to take your place as PO for these other shower, like, you know. So anyway, to cut a long story short, he said if you could get a draft ship now, he said, but you couldn't catch the ship up. So I said, how do you mean? He said, well, it's just sailing at 1 o'clock, such and such a ship. I said, I could be on that. So you've got to realise, to get a draft sheet, you have to have everything stamped. You have to have your medical card stamped, you have to have your long clothing returned, you have to have a medical, you have to do this, you have to do that, that and the other. I said, I can get that done. So I knew a sergeant, no, PO, crewman we'll call him, we'll be polite now, a crewman, which was a coloured gentleman. I said, here, take this round to all them and get them stamped for me. So, all right, boss, going out. So he gets it stamped. Comes back half an hour later. And I said, cheerio to him, I'll get in this old army wagon and go turn up and get aboard the ship. The only thing I forgot was, when we got a ship, no one was expecting me. I think it was a, I don't know, it was on two castle boats, three castle boats, Dunnottie Castle, Dunvegan Castle it was. And they said, all right, you better go in the PO's mess and there, so go there. And there was always one, either one meal short or something, because I hadn't been ventilated in. Anyway, when I got off Bathurst on the way home, I'd started getting symptoms of malaria. And I didn't get inoculated in the barracks before I left, you know, in Freetown. And whether the original injections had worn off, so I started doping myself up with Mepocin tablets. And thought, well, I might get put ashore at Gibraltar. We call it Gib on the way home. Can I just go? Anyway, when we got to Gib, I decided to take more of these Mepocin tablets, and it did work. Anyway, we landed eventually in the Clyde at Gorick, and it was snowing then. And some of the lads said to me, hey, Johnny, you look more like a chink. He said, you're yellow, which I was. All these Mepocin tablets had made me go yellow, you see. Anyway, eventually got down to Devonport. Got me 14 days leave. And the malaria did keep coming on and off for quite a long time, but even a few years afterward, but eventually it cleared up altogether and no problem at all. Then by this time, I'd got put in charge of an Ursi rescue boat out of Mill Bay Docks, Plymouth. And it was converted to a fire float. It was 30 odd knots of ex-RAF big launch it was. And when the Sunderlands took over from Mount Batten in, or Mount Wise, I forget what it was called now, at Plymouth, my job was to follow. I had 12 ratings aboard with me, and to escort them out as he took off, in case he caught fire or anything like. We did eventually, it was worthwhile. We put one Sunderland out in 4 minutes with foam. We used to carry 4,000 gallons of foam, which in those days was ox blood. And that made the foam, and we'd done a good job. Occasionally we went out
with... Ox blood?
Ox blood, that was the foam. Sounded after, no, but that's what they told me. That used to be, you put chemicals in with ox blood, and that made the foam to put the fires out.
It was actual ox's blood, was it?
Well, yeah, that's what they said, like, I don't know. I'd never heard of it till that, like, you know, wouldn't have known otherwise, you know. So,
anyway, so you were operating out of Mount Batten?
Well, we were in Mill Bay Docks, actually, the old RNLI headquarters it was like. You know.
Is this 43?
Oh, no, it's getting on. Oh, no, it's 44 then. Like. Hmm.
How long had you been in Freetown for then? A few weeks or a few months?
No, I was on the Malcolm then. Nearly, I think your time must be wrong, because on the Malcolm, nearly 3 years.
So, were you
at the moment of the invasion? then the invasion was just going to start then, like, you know.
Any memories of D-Day?
No, nothing. I wasn't involved personally in that, like, no.
So were you at Millbay Docks right to the end of the war?
Yeah, that's right, to the end of the war, then, yeah.
And then were you demobbed?
I came over to Londonderry then, to eventually go as a... what did I go to Londonderry eventually for? I forget what I got sent to Londonderry for. Oh, when to go on a destroyer, but I never actually joined it. When the U-boats were given in, a place called Le Chihali, but that was nothing, like, you know, it was just...
You didn't see the U-boats surrendering?
Oh, yes, yes, in Le Chihali, did I, yeah.
What did you see of the U-boats?
Well, he kept coming in with a couple of, most of them tied up at a place called Le Chihali in Loch Foyle. Never had anything to do with them, like, you know.
What did they look like? In good condition?
Oh, yes, they didn't surrender. Put it this way, we never beat the U-boats. A lot of people said we did, but the crews were adamant, you know.
Were the crews arrogant?
Yes, they were very arrogant, yeah.
Even after VE Day?
Yes.
What would they be doing?
Well, they were walking around the Chihali as if they owned the place. But it's very difficult to say, because you never had personal touch with them. Like, you could almost...
Did they say anything to you?
No, I never had any contact, personal contact. No.
How do you feel now about having served in the Navy in the Second World War? How do you feel about having served in the Navy in the Second World War?
Well, I've often wondered what it was all about, but I suppose I'm very proud to have taken part in it. It's about all you can say. I think it was. It had to happen, like, you know. And
can you tell me what the job of a coxswain is in a Royal Navy ship?
Well, first job is to steer the ship in more serious circumstances. You know, bring it alongside the wall and. In charge of it, and it's on a destroyer or a smaller, the older type of destroyer. He's more of the policeman as well. He makes sure the discipline is carried out, if you get what I mean. He takes the men under punishment to the skipper and all this, like, you know.
So in charge of discipline?
Yes.
How did the ratings get on with the officers in the Second World War?
Discipline was very strict, but I never had any experience of anybody going out of line, if you get what I mean. You know, it was... If the lads went ashore and started drinking, it was usually the POs that took the camp back. You know, they sort of tried to cover up a lot for the lads, like, in all this. But a few times, you know. And that's why you very seldom got, we'll say, a junior rating. Once he got promotion, stayed aboard the same ship. It was very unusual for me as a PO to stay aboard the ship. That's why you didn't leave the ship because of anything particular, only personality. You couldn't get involved with the ratings at all. Once you said a thing, it had to be done. You know, if you gave an order, that order had to be obeyed straight away. But if you had mates on it and you were in one mess, say you'd been